Good afternoon. We'd like to welcome everyone to this afternoon's study session for the Mesa City Council for Monday, July 2nd, 2012.
Jeannie will not be here.
She will not be here.
No.
Councilmember Higgins will not be joining us.
No, Mayor, I'm here.
She's here.
She changed her mind. Wait. Oh, my gosh. There's a revelation. She is. Well, she's still not here, but she is joining us.
So she lied to me.
Yeah, that's between you and her. Councilmember Higgins, welcome.
Thank you.
The first item on today's agenda is to review the agenda for both tonight's City Council meeting and next week's City Council meeting, as we have two in a row. So we'll start with the July 2nd, 2012 Council meeting. Page 2, items 2 and 3A. Items 3B through 3D. Items 3E through 3G. Items 3H through 4A. We'll have a presentation on 4A a little bit later. Items 4B through 4G. Let me come back to 4G. Items 5A through 6E. Okay. Go back to 4G. Bond election. I don't think everybody was here when we got the presentation on the amount of the bond election. And there's a couple of us missing. They were joining on the phone and everything. Does everyone feel comfortable with that amount?
Yeah. Yes.
Councilman Finter, you want
to? Well, no, with regard to that amount, what I was hoping, and I was appreciative of staff gathering information, and it's a learning experience for me and others that we're limited on the actual ballot language to roughly about 25 words, I believe it is. And my goal and hope was that we get as much information out to the voters, and so they tell me that's accomplished through the publicity pamphlet that'll be. And thankful, I'm grateful for staff to. As they broke down the different costs and different valuations, it's hard to be specific, and it's different for different folks. But what I'm hoping to do, you know, as we accomplish, is be able to have all of that information out for folks so they know that this is the impact, this is what it's going to cost, so there isn't any questions later that, hey, I was never told. So, again, my appreciation to staff to really making an effort to gathering that information and having it available. So it'll be up to voters to really examine the issues and look at the costs and make a good decision. So I appreciate that.
Okay. And in looking through the publicity plan pamphlet for the last one, it gets pretty specific as to what's included, what, as you mentioned, the impact and those kind of things. So I'm assuming we'll follow the same.
Oh, absolutely. And I think what the plan is, I think where some of the questions are, we've been able to gather the information on the residential side fairly easily. The commercial side's a little more problematic just because of the database. But what we do in the pamphlet is actually use it on identify it on a per million dollar assessed value, and then we give that impact, and then it allows the businesses to
calculate
that on their own. And we found that that's probably the most effective way to do it. And I think even for the residential, we did it per 100,000. Is that correct? So that even the average can be very skewed, and so if we give it in those increments, it makes it easier.
Well, it's not skewed. It's easier math if you just do it.
Right, and it's more precise. Someone can apply it to their specific circumstance. I think that's right. The key. So we'll have that. The information we used in the – or the format that we used in the previous bond election, we'll provide that again.
Okay. Councilor Pender?
And as a follow-up, what I found, you know, last time we did this in 2008 on the public safety bonds – it was the first time that a secondary property tax had been levied, and I think there was probably a in the community, they didn't realize, you know, we had done it for decades before where it was paid from sales tax and other things. And so it's good to know that, you know, people are better educated now. They realize, and it's just nice now to have that information, and they know that they can go to that pamphlet and get that, you know, make some good decisions. So.
And Mayor, Councilmember Finter, the publicity pamphlet will be mailed 35 days prior to the election. So we're there's a lot of time for people to review that information and become familiar with it.
It's about the 1st of October that'll go out then. Okay. All right. Okay. If there's nothing else on July 2nd, we'll move on to July 9th. Page 2, items 3A through 3C.
Good afternoon, Mayor Council. Per the applicant request, item 3A and 3B are going to be pulled from the agenda. They don't wish to move forward with it.
3A and 3B. Okay.
Thank you.
Items 3D through 4C. Through 4F, four G through 5D, there aren't dollars amount in there, so
yeah. I know that those bids have been open. Are we prepared to release those now?
Good evening, Mayor, Council. We just received the numbers this morning. They are better than we thought they were going to be, so which is good. We'll have the numbers for you tomorrow morning. They're right in right now. Without the 10% contingency, they're about $7.29 million, roughly, plus the 10% contingency. We'll have those numbers first thing in the morning ready to
and
go.
And you said they're pretty good. Put that in context.
We think right now they're about $1 million less than we thought they were going to be.
Good. We always like that.
Yes.
Okay.
And just a reminder, Mayor and Council, this is an amount that would apply towards the $84 million cap.
Right.
Most of it would be, I guess.
Most of it.
There would be some related to utilities and some of the roads, but most of it would be.
Now, that, just to give people a little bit of an explanation, we have in the agreement and through subsequent meetings of the project committee, which is made up of representatives of the city of Mesa and the Chicago Cubs, because I know there was some question as to when we say it's part of the $84 million, we're very, very explicit that we capped the cost of the stadium at $84 million, and then we allowed for up to $15 million to be paid for ancillary site and other types of costs. Well, one of the challenges with a project like this is literally determining what is a stadium cost and what is site cost.
Road, you know, street improvement, yeah.
Street improvements that aren't. And, you know, we got down to this project committee deciding, you know, which streets fit into the $84 million, which parts of the streets. And I think on one time we even had a how much of this street is needed to provide access to the stadium and how much is needed to provide access to the adjoining development. So, you know, if it's a four-lane street that's planned, two lanes of it are part of the $84 million, and the other two lanes are part of the $15 million, because it's determined that only two lanes are required to get to the stadium, but we want four lanes so we can access some of the other things like that. And that's where that committee came down and negotiated, discussed, talked about, and put in the budget into whether it went into the 84 and the 15. Am I explaining this correctly?
Yes.
And Mayor, just
we've had many details.
Also, because this is the grading, and we're literally going to grade from one end of the site to the other, so not only includes everything that's included for spring training activities and the $15 million related to utilities and parking, but some of it will also benefit the park improvements in that area. Park. So we're working very carefully with the contractor to make sure we allocate those out to every portion.
So those were determined. Those budget items were determined before we went out and bid. So that as we go through, the accounting will take place, that is, we let a contract that has at least two and sometimes three different areas, then that contract, as it's paid, will track whether it applies against the 84 is taken in the 15 or maybe as some other cost and expenditure.
But this, and just this, when you go out there and you see this work being completed, it will be the entire 100-acre site, everything. There'll be blades and scrapers all over that site when we get started in the next few weeks.
But that's a good example of how we talked about it before, as to even though it's a single job, it does have different components. Those are different budget items, and those will be accounted for consistent with their budget items. Because as the Chicago Cubs have found out, we're extremely serious about this $84 million cap. We're going to make sure that this project lives up to that. And we're extremely serious about the costs being allocated that truly relate to the stadium and the other ones where we have discretion over whether we'll spend it or not. And in the 84, of course, we agreed to spend up to $84 million, and everything above that is the Chicago Cubs' responsibility. So maybe just wanted to get a little overview as we're approving these contracts, that's how it will play out, and there will be an accounting, there will be a tracking. Councilmember Richens, or Council? Okay, Councilmember Fender.
I couldn't tell the way this is laid out, but I've heard there's been some progress. I read an article that was concerning about the lake and other things, but I think there's been some positive progress along those lines, and I didn't know if this is the appropriate time, but hate to have that lingering out there and people thinking.
No, and it's been ongoing discussions, and a lot of it had to do with just get clarification of elements like this, what the project costs were going to be. And so I think related to the irrigation systems, we've come to an agreement on that. It's a pretty simple formula. We figure out what it would take to align the current lake as it is today, the 3.5 acres. I think it's 3.5 acres, what that cost would be. We're going to expand the lake, so that's outside of this cost. So if you just go back to the current size of the lake and what it would cost to have that lake function for the next 30 years to serve as storage for water for both the park area as well as spring training, we've identified that cost. Contractors given us that element. Then we apportioned out that there's turf that's both responsible for the Cubs, but there's also turf for the existing softball fields in the parks, and then we apportioned out that cost to each side of that, and came up with a number that both parties have agreed to. So I think we're ready to we're moving forward on that.
Okay, set. No, just to emphasize, the one thing is we are expanding the size of the lake, and I looked at you because I know people in your area are very, very concerned about what's going to happen to Riverview Park. First step in really improving Riverview Park. Go ahead.
I was wondering if we could go back to item 4F.
4F, yeah.
There's still a few unresolved issues there that need to be talked through. I don't think the neighborhood there is completely satisfied with the resolution of some of the traffic flow issues and other items related to that. We just haven't been briefed in some time on that. Okay. So I was wondering if we could pull this agenda item pending a discussion to get that resolved. I know that there's been some neighbors express some angst over that, and so I just need somebody to get with me to bring me up to speed, or maybe a few of our neighborhood folks as well. So I don't know if it should even stay on for the 9th or if they
can get to we leave it on for the 9th and try to get a briefing before then.
I would encourage that.
That would be good. Okay. We'll talk to...
In its current form, it's not something I can really support right now.
Okay.
I've heard a lot of worry. And it's mostly a lack of information. So I'm trying to send a clear message to the people that have been working on this. Communication has not been good.
Okay.
And so we need to fix that.
All right.
Ms. Union?
We would like to leave it on for the 9th. I'll get with you first thing. Communicate.
But I think Cindy and her staff need to be visiting with the councilman about the project.
And Dan, okay.
Yeah.
But this is to award for the visitor center and the parking improvements. So if we go till after the break, then we'll probably lose the bids. So we'll have to rebid it. So.
You have more reason to get with a council member in his neighborhood.
Thank you.
I don't want to open a can of worms. Why don't you guys talk? But I'm a little questioning as to if we're building a visitor center, outdoor covered station, and parking, have those plans been reviewed with the neighborhood?
We haven't seen them for about 9 months.
Okay.
Oh.
and we've been asking about them and haven't seen anything. So that's...
Has anything changed in 9 months?
Well, at the time, there was a number of issues that were raised. The circulation on 10th Street, how tour buses will be handled coming in and out of the site, because tour buses can't park.
Oh, so you saw something, there was some questions raised.
So there's been several questions that have been left unaddressed.
I'd be happy to give a little bit of information, Mayor.
Why don't you do that?
We've been working with the museum folks. We have a preliminary design for a bus pullout on date. It's going to accommodate two school buses. Our plan has always been to keep the buses on that brown date loop and not have them on 10th Street. We've previously had a speeding problem and cut-through problem on 10th Street. We've largely addressed that with speed cushions a few years ago. Traffic volumes are well down. Speeding is down considerably. Our plan was to incrementally address if something develops on 10th Street to take care of that problem. Our goal is keep the masses, if you will, on the loop road. There's going to be, I think I read, 16 parking spots on site. And my understanding from Tom Wilson was that they're going to start with some limited hours. That gives us an opportunity to monitor and see what the impacts might be on 10th Street. And if something develops, we would be prepared, as we discussed with Councilmember Richens, for a little bit more traffic calming. We have an opportunity, if we need to do what we call bulb outs, so we'll narrow the throat of 10th Street at date to make it so it's not enticing for through traffic. We also have a opportunity there to kind of create a parking bay on the north side of 10th Street adjacent to the Mesa Grande property to reserve additional parking so it doesn't impact the neighborhood as much.
Yeah, and those are all solutions that we had talked about. Yes. I hadn't seen it implemented into any plan yet.
We'll pull it off until you tell us you're ready to go with
it. So, yeah, those are all solutions that we talked about.
We need to visit with the council.
You know, I just don't know where it ended up.
I apologize for that.
Frustration there.
I did want to clarify. You said you hadn't seen it for a few months. Not much has changed on the site from the time you saw it in terms of the small visitor center we are putting there. But there was a funding issue with this project, right. And the department went back and got additional funding from some other sources to complete the project. Okay. So we did hold it until the funding was in place, and that did take a few months to get it in place.
Yeah, I heard rumors about that, but nobody ever communicated what was going on. It just kind of disappeared for several months. And Dan has been great. I mean, he sat down with us and talked about possible solutions, but I just never knew where it ended up.
Right. I don't even know if there's anybody here from the museums. So, frankly, I don't know if the interest is from the department on this project anyway, so maybe we ought to pull it.
Okay. We'll talk.
Yeah, but it's a museum project, so
okay.
We'll get with them to get with you guys.
Oh, this is the ninth.
No, it's a project related issue.
No, let's leave it. This is a ninth July 9th issue.
Right.
So you've got a whole week.
Got a whole week.
We got a week to get.
You got a whole week to cover these, and we're
not pulling it for tonight. It's
right.
You got to be ready to go before we can bring it back on the ninth.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Thank you. All right. 5A through 5D. Five E through 6A. And 7A. Councilman or Vice Mayor.
Can I have somebody talk about why we're reducing the standard on the lighting for this particular area? Normally I'm fine with that if the area has a view or if there's a reason for that, but this is surrounded by residential communities, and to the south is scheduled to be industrial space. So I'm curious as to what the environmental reason is for lowering the lighting standard. And I apologize because I somehow missed this last week.
Mayor, Vice Mayor, it's simply a request from the developer to create his vision of his unique community as he has done with the rest of Morrison Ranch and the town of Gilbert. This is similar to the reduction that was approved for Eastridge as well.
Which
one is Morrison Ranch or Eastridge?
What
is
East being
Mark or Eastridge?
I misspoke. It's East Mark.
So this is consistent with what Morrison Ranch is their lighting scheme and standard that they utilize in their subdivision, or the Morrison Ranch portion in Gilbert.
That's correct.
They're looking to do a continuation of that community
in
ours, and they want them to follow the same standards.
Okay. And that's correct. What's in here is similar to what's in East, been approved for portions of East Mark.
Which portions of East Mark?
Now, they are the local streets and certain land use groups. I don't recall off the top of my head the all of the land use groups. They're the ones that are, as I recall, oh, here it is. They are, it's based on the street classification and land use on public neighborhood streets in land use group Village District, where continuous sidewalk lighting and landscape is providing open space, civic space.
Well, doesn't this basically allow them to use an alternative architectural scheme on their lights and make it more consistent? Because if they put in our standard street lights, the theme that they've created, just like at Eastmark, we're trying to create a specific theme, which means you want flexibility in going and putting more decorative or architectural or spacing them a little bit different, as opposed to our standard, which is which requires very specific light standards, like whatever you call them, poles and that, very specific distance, and it doesn't give you that flexibility. Isn't that what they're trying to achieve? Is it to get a different feel for the neighborhood, just like they did, as I think you referenced, the Desert Uplands? I mean, is that what we're trying to accomplish? It's not about lowering the standards. It's about allowing them the ability to go in and put in their architectural design, which if they put those in, falls below our standards, our basic standards, as if we went in and put in our very generic streetlights. Is that really what's happening?
It's actually a combination of the unique design of their poles and fixtures they'd like to use and a lower level of lighting than would be used in a conventional subdivision per the standards. So it's
Uplands is what confuses me, because this is not Desert Uplands. This is the typical subdivision.
Well, it's I think that's what they're arguing is that it's not a typical subdivision. Because if you've been to Morrison Ranch in Gilbert, it has a different scheme. And that's where I'm not sure that when you say the lower lighting standard, is that the cause or the effect? I think going with the more architectural lighting things, you don't get the same light output that you would on your standard, because those are tall, they're wide, they go down, whereas if I remember, the ones are more localized, they are on the sides of the streets, they create more of an agricultural type look, and you can't meet the higher standards if you use that kind of design. It was my understanding.
That's not quite...
Is that not quite it?
You couldn't meet the standard by placing them closer together. Part of Morrison's desire is to not have as much light in their neighborhood.
Is to create more of an agricultural
type of
thing.
It's not necessarily a factor of using that type of pole and fixture. You can use that type of pole and fixture and have continuous lighting along the streets. They
specifically but you got to put them close together.
Do not, exactly. They specifically do not want that.
So it's a combination of the two.
That's correct.
Okay.
Well, Morrison Ranch and Gilbert, what kind of lighting standard do they have around it? Because the area to the north is going to have typical lighting. The area to the east, area to the west hasn't developed yet, and the area to the south hasn't developed, but that's slated to be industrial. So you're going to get a lot of light anyway.
If I may speak up, Scott Morrison with Morrison Ranch. We have the last three projects built at the light level that we're requesting. And it is true that we are both using something that looks kind of like a gas lamp, although it's a standard electrical fixture. And the result is that if we tried to meet the Mesa lighting standard, we would have those very frequently down the street. Because we are trying to hearken to the East Valley's agricultural roots, our internal streets are more softly lit. Now, the arterial streets have the same fixtures as always. We're not trying to affect arterial street lighting. We're trying to get the interior streets of the neighborhood to feel more like the agricultural heritage that we grew up with. So that has been successful in Morrison Ranch. It feels that way, even though there's a shopping center and an arterial street that has regular light fixtures as soon as you pull off into the neighborhood. It's just got a softer, between the green grass, tree-lined streets, and the softer lighting, it just contributes to that field, and that's why we're making the request.
I grew up in the city of Rochester. I know, I have no idea what you're talking about. Would you send me some of your designs?
Absolutely.
I'd
we tried
like
to make
to see
contact
what it is
a bit ago.
Well, the other thing, the good thing we have is you can just go drive through Morrison Ranch and Gilbert.
Yeah,
like you said, there's just an extension.
I've been there, but I know he's got some stuff on this.
Absolutely glad to do that.
Just send it to me. You just email it to me.
Yep.
I'll call you. I have your number.
Very good.
Thanks.
Okay. Thank you. Anything else? Thank you. All right. The next item. If I can find it. Here, presentation discuss, provide direction on the Mesa Urban Garden.
Mayor and Council, good evening. I'm Donna DeFrancesco with Environmental and Sustainability Division, Development and Sustainability Department. I'm here just to give you a really brief introduction to what we're talking about tonight, the community garden in downtown Mesa. And I just wanted to give you a tiny bit of background because it is on the consent agenda for a land use agreement at 212 East First Avenue. So, as you all are very aware, this whole initiative did come from iMesa. So we're very excited. I've got a lot of people up here with me, and I'm going to introduce you to them in just a moment. We've got some fans in the crowd, including some iMesa representatives, some other folks on the board, and so forth. But it came through iMesa to foster the development of an urban garden and empty parcels in downtown. The city looked at the feasibility of doing these gardens. And one of the things that we kept hearing as we were talking to others about this whole project was that this was something that not for the city to do and then invite people to come garden. This was something the community, it would be successful if the community actually installed this garden. So we knew that that was a great way to have this be very successful. So we started asking for the community for idea to action plan proposals, and we asked for that in December, and the deadline for that was in February. And we, in the meantime, we had a workshop through our Living Green series that was steps to starting a community garden, where we really started getting some dialogue going. We also attended some iMesa meetings. We've really started getting some connections with the community members. And as you can see, we've got lots of them here. It's already showing just how much it's bringing community together. I wanted to just outline some of the other proposals that came in, because you'll probably be hearing more about them later as well. But Bethlehem Lutheran Church has started their Harvest of Hope Garden. That was on private property. It's up at 32nd Street and McKellips, and they've already got theirs up and going. West Mesa CDC is still working on their Washington Escobedo Thriving and Community Pride Garden, which is located at northeast corner of Lewis and 5th. And they've got, as you all know, lots of activity going on in that whole neighborhood. So they'll be getting that proposal together soon. But what we're here to talk to you about today is the Mesa Urban Garden. They've submitted the proposal for the downtown garden. And I'm going to introduce you to Drew Trojanowski. He's the chairman for this. And I know many of you have already spoken with him already. And he's certainly the main champion. He's been out there really talking with people and getting connected. Ryan Winkle is here. He's vice chairman and also been very involved with the initial proposals and the whole ideas. Cynthia Williams is on my right. She's our director of community engagement and also the executive director of Agape Community Services. Jason Thatcher's down here on the end. He's the chief operating officer. Experience as a school teacher and lots of information about community gardens as well. With that, I'm going to turn it over to Drew. He's going to provide this proposal and give you just a little background.
Good afternoon, and thank you for having us. Again, as Donna said, we are the result of the iMesa Community Garden Initiative proposal. So all of us kind of came together, and they feathered out which ones they would like to have, and we became an amalgamation of such and run under the flag of Mesa Urban Garden, and that's how we've been running as such. And as we've been developing it, we knew that we needed to engender a lot of help to get something like this off the ground. And all of this, by the way, was under the guise that I'm going to be deployed to Afghanistan at the end of this week, actually. So this has been a very quick 2 months to get to where we are now. And as we started reaching out to the community, we realized that we wanted to create a sense of community between the north and south side of Main Street. So being able to tie that together by creating this node where you're going to have Benedictine University coming in, you're having a brand new restaurant that's going to be opening, you're going to have a community garden that's going to be next to it, was something that was very interesting to us. And for us, the idea behind having a food desert, our main focus is to capitulate three C's that we saw in the city. It was to aid the city, to aid the community, and aid commerce. And how we'd like to hit each three of those is, as far as the community runs, we know that there's a slight disconnect between the community that's there and the idea of a community garden. So we've sought out aggressive sponsorships for the plots on site. And there's going to be roughly 118 plots on site. And we are going to be able to give plots directly to the community so they can tend them. So there'll be a social contract to create between ourselves and the community, so they'll be able to tend and get free produce and offset the fact that they don't have access to fresh food unless they go to a food bank, which is sometimes derelict food, whatever it may be. We've also struck a deal with Local First so that we can create a food plan that assists with chefs curtailing their menu specifically to food that will grow in the garden, so they'll be able to assist with commerce in that sense, so they can demonstrate that they're working within the community and have those community connections to us. And it's also in vogue, as you know, to have an organic-based diet and have, you know, that kind of green-based rationale. So, and then beyond that, we are aggressively pursuing it becoming a sustainable site as an accredited program. And we are going to have solar on site that's going to be donated to us. We're going to do some easement development, rainwater reclamation on site. We're going to have aggressive composting again. And so it becomes a green feather in the cap for the city of Mesa. And so what we do is create something that is aesthetically pleasing. That was another big goal of ours, is to create something that wasn't just, for lack of a better term, a gypsy camp. And we wanted something that would be beautiful and would also draw people in, that would hug you with this green space, something that is just alluring. And so we worked very diligently to connect with the rest of the community. And we did that. We met very early on with the Mesa Arts Center. The Mesa Arts Center assisted us in the sense that they are going to put murals on all the walls. And they were the first front runner with us to do that. And so as we've been pursuing other people, we had assistance from the light rail transit authority that's going to be developing that is QIT or VTC. I can't remember what the acronym stands for. But VTC is capitulated to help us quite a bit as well. And then we've had other sponsorships from, there's a restaurant that's going to go in next to us that's going to co-open with us. It's Republica Empanada. And we're going to have a symbiotic relationship and share that space with them. And so our success is based on their success as well, because we want to grow with them. Nedco has worked with us quite a bit. DMA has worked with us quite a bit. The VFW, Monsterland, Robbie Bobby's Pizza, the Mark Center, BFFB Law Group, Local First, Valley Metro, the City of Mesa. So we've had quite a bit of response from the community that they'd like to get this off the ground. And that's what's been the most amazing thus far, is how much the community seems to respond to this. The more that I get out there and speak with anybody, the more that the rest of us get out there and speak with anybody. We had the Celebration of Freedom event. We went to a health fair expo at the Mesa Family Health Center. And everybody responds at a high level. And so we don't think that there will be an issue. There has been some issue in the past with other initiatives that may have had issue with community engagement. And we aggressively pursued community engagement. And so we have also, Cynthia here represents Agape. And they're bringing to the table quite a few volunteers to work on site and quite a few people to have bought plots on site. And so that's how the structure of the garden is going to work, is that you have all these plots on site and they'll be rented at a cost. The first cost is $80 for a smaller one, and the larger is $120. So it's relatively nominal, and it covers down for us for our water costs or for our insurance and for other overhead issues that we may have, just so that we can cover on those. And then Cynthia's brought, at a minimum, 50 people for that site. And then as the rest of it goes, we have enough sponsorships at this point. I mean, we've garnered basically a waiting list. So I don't think the issue is that the community is going to be involved. And I apologize if I glaze over things. The location is going to be at 202 East First Ave. So you may or may not know exactly where that is, but that's directly next to the courthouse. It's next to a restaurant that's going to be open soon called Republica Empanada. It is a block south of where the light rail station is going to be, or light rail is going to run, and also where Benedictine is going to be. And again, it's 15,000 square feet. And so if you look at your screen, you can see an idea of the plot layout, how we're going to do it. And it's structured in the sense that there's nodal pods everywhere, and our structure will detail how that will run in an operational sense. But beyond that, and when you see the garden on the outset, there's a lot of concern, too, about security, because the south of Maine is a little bit of a fray. And we've designed it with SEDTEP, so we capitulated to the Mesa PD. And so they want to make sure that they can see on-site from their car or even on foot or however they want to do it. We also have an enormous amount of lighting available to us, industrial lighting from the street or from other sites around. And beyond that, our security measures, too, will be included to making sure the community buy-in's there, and that's what we've done. And we offer that to them so that they participate at a high level. When you own something as a community, you're responsible for it. If there's that disconnect, it won't be there. And again, here is a bunch of the community connections, as you can see on there. This was a relatively brief overview. Do you guys have any questions for us or comments?
Questions? Councilman Richens.
Community gardens are a fascinating study in community development and policy. And, you know, it's not just about vegetables. It's about revitalization. And that's why I'm so excited to see this starting to move forward. And I think the one thing that I want to see is what happens a lot in a lot of communities is we set aside a parcel for a community garden, and that community garden becomes it starts to help revitalizing the neighborhood. And the developer or the owner of the property ends up saying, oh, well, hey, look, this neighborhood's starting to turn around. It's time to develop this lot. So all this blood, sweat, and tears that have gone into the ground over the last several years gets bulldozed for whatever project happens. This is a city-owned lot. And I think the thing I'd like to see with this particular parcel is for it to, if we're going to make this a community garden, let's make it a community garden. Let's commit to it. And the land ownership of this is important, you know, whether it's the city retains ownership or whomever retains ownership of it, that we program this just like it's park space. And these guys want to take accountability for that. I think they should be able to run with it. But it's really important that they don't spend a bunch of time now and see it go into the blade of a bulldozer in several years. I think this is a great amenity to downtown. Downtowns aren't all about buildings. They're about open spaces, too, and programmed open spaces that bring activity. And I think this is a great opportunity to add this kind of element to our downtown. And so I'd like to just see, you know, I think the lease now is appropriate for the next 5 years. It gives us time to work out what that land tenure should be. But if we're going to do a community garden at this location, let's commit to it, and let's let it be a community garden and let it flourish and be organic and, you know, have successes, have failures. It's going to have both of those things over time. But it's important that we support this effort and that it's not something that we just think, oh, well, this will turn around that part of downtown and then we're going to bulldoze it for something else someday. You know, let's commit to having one of these as an example in our community. And so, I mean, let's support the first 5 years of it and go from there. I don't know, thoughts?
No, I think what I'm hearing you say is it would be a shame if we, through the lease, committed to 5 years, and let's say a year into it, somebody, a developer, comes in and says, yeah, I really like it. Looks like it's about a third of an acre.
That's about it.
Yeah. Somebody comes in and says, man, that third of an acre would be really nice for some building, whatever it is, and we, and you know you might have that pressure. And that's a great pressure to have, because somebody's interested in building something, and I think that we can send out the message. We can send out a couple messages. The first message is we're going to commit to this, and let's fill in a lot of the other spaces we have. It's not that we lack for property in downtown, right, and city-owned developable property. And if this is part of, if what I'm hearing you correctly say, if this is part of our development plan, let's let this run its course to be that beacon, that signal, and not go out and actively put this on the available property.
Right. Real estate generates a list. Give us a list of all the real estate that's
available. Maybe we take that off.
Can we take that off the real estate?
We don't market it. Okay. Right. And that's a roundabout way of getting there, but that's what I think I hear you say.
That sounds wonderful, by the way, Councilman.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
I just love this concept. I've seen him work in a lot of other communities. It's time for, I think Mesa's right for this kind of thing. I have a small budget in our council office. It's a community partnership funds, and I want to pledge the first $1,000 out of my community partnership fund to this effort. I think it's important. I'm going to lay down a challenge for my other council members. Don't throw in another $1,000. Let's see how much we can raise.
I'll put in $1,000 more out of your account. That's two. You want to?
Let's see how much we can raise right now. So, come on, Councilmember Glover. I'm putting down $1,000. What do you say?
Mr. Richens, if you had attended the meeting that Councilmember Kavanaugh and I attended, I already pledged $1,000.
All right, I'm glad to see them. Very good. So we got $3,000 then?
I like it better when you guys get like locked up in jail and then you have to ask people to bail you out. Then I can say, nah, let me think about it. Councilmember Kavanaugh.
Of course, at the meeting that Councilmember Glover and I attended that you didn't attend, we thought we heard that the IMESA account that the mayor has was going to help pay for
I actually don't see this on the agenda. I think I need to call a rule of order here. You were doing fine until Councilmember Kavanaugh started speaking. No, I think we'll I think we're going to be fine with what we money will not be the issue. We'll find a way to make this work. I know there was a gap. It wasn't really big. But I know that we've already talked, Kathy McDonald and I have talked about calling on some friends that I have. So we'll make sure that this becomes a reality, whether it be from the council account or some other source.
Thank you, sir.
But I appreciate what you're saying, because I think we need to state it right now that we're committed to this. And and hopefully everyone understands that. And I hope that you have great success. I've seen that where other community gardens look like they just get going there, and it looked like they were in a, and I don't know the history of them, but there was one just in Tempe that the community garden I went by just the other day, and it had been
gone.
There was a construction project, and I'm sure the construction project is beautiful, mm-hmm. but it was sort of sad that the community garden was gone.
Yep.
And once again, I don't know what the history is there, but I think this is significant enough that let's give it some time. I agree with you on that.
So you have that commitment to seeing it happen, and what you need to do is commit to coming back in a year and seeing it.
No problem, I'll be here.
Thanks. That's right.
Be safe.
Thank you, I will.
Oh, and you
have a lot of people praying for you. So.
For those of you who don't know, Drew is deploying in about a week, deploying to overseas, which is one reason why we're really pushing to get this done, because Drew, he's done such a great deal, and literally traipsing around and selling, twisting arms. I don't know that the camels had anything to do with his success rate. But we have a lot of people for who this is a passion, and that's really exciting. So I'd like to make this the whole city's passion, because it is something that shows that we're doing great stuff. So thank you so very much for your efforts, and I'd like to add my good luck. You know, you're going to be back a year from now, safe and sound, and we'll deliver you something that you'll be proud of, and we'll all be proud of.
Fantastic. Thank you, sir. Thank
did
you,
we
Council.
Introduce? I may have missed it. Introduce everyone there at the table. Yes. We did. I was reading up on. I was in here going through your presentation. I'm sorry.
He was playing Angry Birds.
I do that sometimes. I skip ahead on the. That's a horrible habit I have, to skip ahead on the PowerPoint. I'm sorry about that. Well, thank you so very much.
Again, thank you, sir. Thank you, Council.
Okay.
Have a good day.
Item 2B, discuss and provide direction on the proposed audit plan. Ms. Jennifer.
Auditing the Council's community funds.
My lovely assistant. Okay, I'm here to present the proposed audit plan for the coming fiscal year, but it's actually already started. And what I'd like to talk about is, as we get this up, the scheduled audits for 12-13 include some repeat or some that are carried over from the prior year because we had, as many of you are aware, some staffing issues in getting some of these done. So these are carryover ones from the prior. The only new ones that you'll see on this list from the prior period are the real estate leases is a new one, and the Arizona Museum of Natural History is actually a substitute for what we had as a general museums audit. And as we did some preliminary work on that, what we realized is we really needed to hone down the objectives on that one. And so we thought we'd start with that one. I wanted to call your attention to the middle section of the audit plan there where we talk about ongoing audits. Those two audits are actually complete at this time, but they haven't been reported to the Council Audit and Finance, Audit, Finance, and Enterprise Committee meeting as yet. And because we haven't gone through the response portion of that process with the department. So once we get those, when the council comes back, we'll work on getting a meeting together. So I wanted to let you know that those are complete. And we have several follow-up audits, which are repeat, where we go back after an audit's been completed and we check and see if everything that we agreed to after the audit has actually been done and implemented and that it actually solved the problem that the finding was calling out in the first place. And on page 2 of the plan, you'll see our regular ongoing repetitive activities that are things that we also do in addition to the scheduled audits that we do each year. And those include just miscellaneous requests from council members and departments, but also running the fraud and ethics hotline. All those calls come into us. And the PCI, which is the credit card security review that you're familiar with. And of course, City Edge is still playing a major role in what we're doing for this coming fiscal year in monitoring that project and also doing some assistance with testing and report development and whatnot for the departments. Any questions?
And you have reviewed this with Councilmember Fenter?
I think we've all had.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we haven't gone over it in its final form. What we did was we discussed the content. There have been some requests for additional audits that will probably you'll see on the 13-14. Audit plan, because by definition we can't really audit something until it happens, and so we're going to try to get those things done as they come to fruition and we can and monitor and see so that we'll have some new things on the agenda for next year.
Great. Okay, any questions for Jennifer? Just to review for some people, for those out there who may not realize, Jennifer is one of the 5 charter officers, which means the city auditor reports directly to the council. The other charter officers, of course, are the city manager, Ms. Spinner, the city attorney, Ms. Crocker, and Judge Tafoya, the chief judge. I'm sitting here looking. He's not sitting here. But this is one of this was implemented by the voters. And Jennifer does a great job of working with us and under our direction and works closely with city management to make sure that we're covering the areas of highest risk and trying to keep things straight, but also giving good suggestions how we can improve our operations. So, and she reports directly to the Audit and Finance, and every time they meet, I think there's a report. And that's why I asked Councilman Fenter, because he's the chair of the Audit, Finance, and Enterprise Committee. So. Councilmember Fenter?
Well, I was just going to say there's a great ongoing communication that goes with the Audit and Finance Committee, other members of council that'll have a concern, and it's very dynamic and ongoing, and really have a lot of confidence in Ms. Ruttman and her staff. It's been I think the citizens would be very appreciative to know the efforts that go on to make sure things are right. So appreciate all that's done there.
Great. Any other questions or comments? Do we have... Do I have direction to move proceed so she can Jennifer can complete this and get all the signatures and everything?
Aye.
Okay. Great. Go ahead. The next item on the agenda is appointment on the agenda is appointments, boards, committees. I sent out to everyone a memo with a variety of new appointments and reappointments. And this is the first wave. We'll go over with one, go over another one next week. But just have one change to this, and that is on the Historic Preservation Board, the Housing Advisory Board. Pat Gilbert is listed as a new appointment, and he's withdrawn his name because of some conflicts as far as work. So that one will not be on there. So if I can entertain a motion, to have a motion from the Vice Mayor and a second from Councilmember Glover. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Dina?
Aye.
Okay. Motion carries. I'd like to thank once again my Chief of Staff, Kathy McDonald. One of her great tasks during the year is to keep track of our boards and committees. And we have dozens and dozens of openings, as you can see, and people serving on our boards and committees. And it's almost a full-time job to keep track of those, and she does a great job. So thank you, Kathy. All right, acknowledge minutes of boards and committees. I have a motion from Councilmember Kavanaugh, second from Councilmember Fenter. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Councilmember Higgins?
Aye.
Okay. Any opposed? Motion carries. Hear reports on meetings and conferences attended. Anything to report? Okay.
Last night, it was like Saturday night or Friday night or something.
Is there anyone out there that could help Dave remember? Oh, did you go see some fireworks?
Oh, yeah, that's right.
You want to report on that?
No, why don't you? It's your party.
No, it's our party.
It is our party.
I know we need to get upstairs, but boy, what a great time Friday and Saturday night. And, it's the third year we've done it, and there's nothing funner than walking down the street. Main Street for nearly a half a mile is how long that was this year, and to literally see tens of thousands of Mesa residents and a lot of people from outside of Mesa. I know there was a lot of people I saw from Gilbert and Chandler and that came over, and we just had a great time. We had here we have a little something on the board showing the area fill up. Once again, I don't know what the number was, but it was in the tens of thousands. Getting up on stage, looking down the street, you see nothing but wall-to-wall people. Like to give I hate when they say shout-out, but I don't know what else to say anymore. But I want to recognize Steve Wright. Steve's in the back of the room there. This is a community event. We have nearly 60 companies and organizations who donate over $500,000 of cash and in kind. And we had nearly 500 people volunteer. The city doesn't cut a check, but we do provide direction and a lot of resources from our various departments. And Steve Wright is the head honcho that coordinates all of this as part of his many other duties as our public information officer. So thank you, Steve. And Melissa Rondosso sitting right next to him, and I don't know if Jesse's in here. Jesse's not in here. Jesse Roderson, also all from our PIO.
Kevin Christopher.
Oh, Kevin. Where's Kevin? Oh, there's Kevin. Our PIO office sort of takes the ball and runs with this and coordinates all these various parties that donate a lot of money. We have professionals who actually run the day-to-day operation, but it's a huge undertaking. And when you have 40,000, 50,000 people in downtown that, you know, frankly, I don't know that we had any issues at all. Once again, 3 years in a row, we've had no issues, we've had no problems, and it's just a great fun. So thank you to everybody who was involved. We really appreciate it. Look forward to next year, our fourth annual. Look to make this a real tradition, and you'll see some new changes. We don't know how light rail construction will impact it, but we're already starting to plot and scheme as to how we'll work it and still make downtown the gathering place and work around what I hope is an active construction area, because that means we'll be getting things done. So. Thanks for reminding me of that. Anything else? Mr. Brady.
Just a reminder, we will not have a study session this Thursday morning. You can go watch those other fireworks shows if you want. But they won't be as good. And then that morning, though.
They will not be as loud, I will tell you that. I had somebody.
They won't be shooting them off the top of buildings.
That they won't. That is, nobody does that. Nobody in Arizona.
You wonder why. When you own your own buildings, you can shoot fireworks off of your buildings.
Nice insight, Councilmember Dave.
Move on.
No, they were at Lindsay and McDowell and said they heard the fireworks go off. So go ahead.
And then just that morning, there will be the groundbreaking for the community gardens at 8 a.m.
Good. And you want to make an introduction?
Oh, yes. Michael, come forward. I'd like to introduce to the mayor and council. I think some of you had a chance to meet Michael. He is our new chief financial officer, just started today. So we welcome him here today. He came to us from American Express.
Yep.
So glad to have him here.
Mayor, council member, thank you. Thanks. I'm glad to be here with a great team and look forward to working with you guys.
And I was, when I met his lovely wife, I was sort of giving her the hard time of coming down to Arizona and didn't realize she was an Arizona native.
Yeah.
So Gila Valley gal.
That's right.
So glad to have you here. Look forward to it.
Appreciate it. Thank
working
you.
With you. Thank you. All right. We have a motion to adjourn from the Vice Mayor, Seven Councilmember Glover. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? We are adjourned. Thank you very much.